Hello and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
Whoa.
No.
Really?
No, huh. I'm not, but he is my favorite conservative.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Right. We want to apologize before we go to the polls for last week. We had some issues live streaming, so we totally apologize. The video and the podcast episode are available, but if you can see us, definitely let us know because we should be live streaming right now on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and maybe Facebook. Still not sure about Facebook. So let us know. But okay. The theme of season three is the march to the election. And so we start each show with the polls. So let's get to it.
Let's do it.
All right. And the Real Clear Politics or RCP, national average, Trump versus Harris. Last week, Harris was up 1.5. Now she is up 1.8.
Okay. And we also look back in history. So this day in history in 2020 and 2016, and to see where everybody was at this point. So last time in 2020, Joe Biden was actually up 6.3, quite a big number there. And in 2016, Hillary Clinton was up 4.6.
And what's interesting about this is this coincides with what's supposed to be that post-election
bounce or post-convention bounce.
Yeah, yes. Post-convention bounce. Yeah. And we were talking about this before we went live. And Harris should really be much higher now.
Yeah. You're not. Yeah. These numbers that that we just said for Biden up 6.3, that was post-convention bounce in 2020. And Harris only being at 1.8. Not a great sign for her, but she's still ahead, at least in terms of her fans. Yes.
All right. So let's get to the battleground states. And again, these are averages. So we'll start with Pennsylvania. Last week, Trump was up 0.2, well within the margin of error. This week, he has increased that lead slightly to 0.5.
All right.
Yes.
You want to stay on the East Coast?
I'll stay on the East Coast. In North Carolina last week, Trump was up 0.9. He's still up, but it's dropped to 0.6. Again, all these within the margin of error. Last week, Trump was up 1 point. He's had a big drop. He's only up 0.2. However, I did a little calculation, a little electoral map calculation.
Oh, do share.
Yes. So Trump could take, if he takes the whole East Coast, like Southeast, if he takes Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, not only does he not need Pennsylvania, and he takes Arizona, for example, if he takes the West and the Southeast, he doesn't need Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania to win.
However, I'll throw a little water on that. Pennsylvania is probably an easier get for Trump than Virginia.
That's true. That's a good point. But I'm just saying he doesn't need everything. So
if he can take Virginia, that's Katie barred the door.
Okay. Go to the Midwest.
Let's do it. Let's go to Michigan.
All right.
Last week, Kamala Harris was up 2.0. Today, she is up 1.1.
So that's a drop for her. Post-convention drop.
Post-convention drop.
Not
yes.
Good.
Yes. In Wisconsin, Harris was up last week 1.0. She's now up 1.4.
Can we just say Wisconsin's going to go Democrat? It just is. It is. I'm calling it right now. All right. Take us out west, Edward.
Let's go to Nevada. Where last week Trump was up 1.4, and now it is a tie, zero.
It's a dead heat.
Yes. Okay. And you want to finish Arizona for
Arizona, us? Last week Harris was up 0.2. Now Trump is up 0.5. So that's not a whole point difference, but again, still within the margin of error. I think Trump is going to take Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. And on predictit.org, oh my God, that might be the first time I've said it correctly.
Amen, sister. You're on a roll.
On the gambling website where people bet on the races. And again, remember, these aren't percentages. These are just numbers. Last week, Harris was at 55. Now she's at 56. Last week, Trump was at 48. He's still at 48. So these don't have to equal 100, by the way. It's kind of wonky. But so Harris still maintains the lead among the gamblers.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, we talked that post-convention bounce.
Yeah.
Normally, that's about like 3 to 4 points. And we're not seeing any of that nationwide for Kamala.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Interesting.
I wonder why. Huh. Could it be because she doesn't do any interviews? Oh, wait. We'll get to it.
Oh my goodness. Well, it hasn't been a huge week for news, but we still had Kamala and her support governor.
Shout out to Megyn Kelly.
Yep.
Because we think she coined that.
I think so. Yes. But he did a friendly interview on CNN.
Yes. So we're not going to spend too much time on this. I know I can't do it. So,
thank God.
Yes. But we're going to look at a few things about the CNN interview. And I actually want to start with when this interview took place, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
A Friday. I know we have this later in our notes here, but it actually took place on Thursday. Aired on Thursday before a holiday weekend.
Correct. Yes.
That was very tactical.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It was. You know, I kind of wondered, did she really kind of be forced to sit down because of the RFK Jr. endorsement of Trump, where she's, you know, hemorrhaging support from those supposedly middle of the road slash liberals, independents. Yeah. Yeah.
So you think that's possible? You think that's why she
I think there's a good chance that was one of her reasons behind it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we talked about the Thursday before the Friday of a holiday weekend. Let's talk about the appearance in general, because if you can, by the way, you can Google this, you can see the clips. It was a really dark cafe. It was dark.
Lighting was bad.
In a dark cafe with dark furniture. The only color you saw behind them was artwork on the walls, like obviously, you know, faded out. But I mean, just overall, if you're going to be in such a dark place with dark furniture and dark walls, you need better lighting, and lighting was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. Her hair wasn't great. Normally she has really good looking hair.
She has great hair.
Her outfit, not the greatest.
Well, she has this tendency to wear blazers that are too big for her.
Well, that it was.
It was way too big for her. But let's also talk about the table and the camera angles.
Yeah, it was a little odd because Tim Walz looked like he was a giant.
He did.
Or she looked like she was a little person.
Yes. Yeah, so it was, she was in the middle of this horizontal table, and Dana Bash is on one end, Tim Walz mm-hmm. is on the other, and of a sort of, you know, like a rectangular table. The camera, there were a couple of cameras, obviously, but the main camera was sort of off to Dana Bash's left, and just the way they were sitting, it all had to do with angles. So for the people watching live right now, we see you. Thank you so much. It means live streaming is working, but we're going to give you an example of this. So technically, I'm actually closer to the camera than Edward. So if Edward goes back the tiniest bit, I look huge. And then if I lean back and he goes forward, he actually
got the
just
big
looks,
head.
Yeah, you look normal. So the other thing I noticed, though, when we watched back the clips was she was not sitting up straight most of the time. And so I'm just going to show again, people watching live.
Yeah.
This is me slouching. Look how short I look. And then this is me sitting up ramrod straight from all those years of ballet. So when she stood up or sat up straight, she looked better.
Yeah, I think Trump even posted on True Social and X that she looks small, not a leader of the free world. It's like, but he had a point.
But there were things that could have been done. Considering how artificially constructed this interview was, there were so many things that could have been done to make Kamala look better, and I'm shocked that her team didn't do them.
Agreed. So. I completely agree. But let's look at some of the questions. You know, Dana Bash was the moderator.
Yes.
And she tried to be tough early on.
Sort of.
Asking some questions. But, you know, it was, to give you a good example, if go ahead and Google Dana Bash and... Dana Bash... And
JD Vance. Oh, JD Vance. Oh, yeah.
She had him on, I don't know, a week or so ago and absolutely badgered him.
Yeah.
Just like was a dog with a bone, wouldn't let it go. And that's the problem is she asked a tough question, but there's no follow up to it. There's no pushing on it. And she might have asked one of the questions, but lets the BS answer come through and then they move on to the next one.
Yeah. And let's talk about the very first question that Kamala tanked. There's no doubt in my mind that she knew this was going to be the first question.
Oh, of course. You knew what every question was.
So tell everybody what it was.
Well, what are you going to do on day one to help the American family, the economy?
No, I think it was just what are you going to do on day one?
Well, I think to help Americans
and with the economy. She totally screwed it up.
Yeah, she said she was going to lift up the middle class.
And then went into drug cost and insulin.
And I've heard some people say, so basically, if you don't have diabetes, you're screwed, right?
I think Megyn Kelly said that.
She's another word, yeah.
Yes, so the thing I think to note is the complete interview was 40 minutes.
The one that they did was 40
minutes. The actual interview was 40 minutes. Okay. But tell our audience, for those who didn't want to waste their time watching this, I feel you. Tell our audience how much they actually aired.
Yeah, questions and answers were only 18 minutes.
18.
Yes.
So CNN aired less than half the interview.
Yeah, so there's 22 minutes out there that are either so boring
or so bad
or so incredibly bad that they cut out more than half of the interview.
Yes.
Her first interview. Yeah. How bad was that?
Yes.
That's got to be unbelievable.
Well, I think the other thing is Kamala was told to be very serious. So she was very serious, very monotone. She only laughed like one time. You kind of saw her natural silly laugh come through.
I believe that called a cackle.
Yeah,
the Kamala cackle.
Yes, yeah. but she mostly was like very stern, very serious. And it kind of reminded me of my neighbors. So when I first moved to Birmingham, I lived in an apartment and I had these neighbors that sat out on their porch and I could hear them right through my paper thin windows. And you heard them.
I did.
And
at all hours of the night.
All hours of the night.
So we're talking like early AM.
And it was just kind of like, yeah, uh-huh. And AI, please don't pick that up. And it was just nothing. They said nothing. And it reminded me of Kamala because it's kind of Kamala is sort of the opposite. So this analogy, you're right, doesn't work as well as I hoped.
Thank you.
But it's kind of like Kamala is the opposite of my neighbors where she says nothing, but she says a lot. It's just this word salad that goes into, it goes in circles. She tried really hard not to do that in this interview.
Let me give a little background to what Andrea just said.
Oh, no.
So last night, as we were doing show prep, Andrea had a couple glasses of wine and wanted to put this in. So I actually wrote in the show notes, Andrea's boring story about her neighbors.
I'm hitting you on the air. Oh, my God, that's so mean. Okay, well, you have a really exciting story, too, about Kamala.
Yeah, so my notes say Edward's scintillating Kamala dinner party analogy.
So what is your dinner party analogy?
So Kamala, to me, is like a dinner party without the entree. Without the main course, okay?
Okay.
Because you sit down with Kamala for a meal, she's going to give you a word salad to start with.
Yes.
There's nothing of substance after that.
Yes.
And then she gets to dessert, which is all the free giveaways that she's going to give you.
Oh, where she Oprah's everything.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So there you go.
Kamala's dinner party. I don't think your analogy works quite as well as mine.
It was scintillating.
But it's okay.
All right.
So we thought we would have a little fun today because we really did not want to spend this entire episode on the 18 minutes that CNN chose to air with Kamala's interview. So we're going to answer some questions that we have been getting when people reach out to us directly. My favorite conservative.show, where you can email us directly. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it could be fun or scary. what I actually find interesting, though, is that the questions that we get the most, they aren't about policy or anything like that. They're about how we handle our relationship.
Yes.
Yeah, there's like this untapped need of people. How do I discuss things with my partner?
Yeah. And I think that's why people tune into our show, because it sucks if you're in a relationship and you can't discuss important issues.
Yeah.
And still be nice to each other.
Well, still
respect each other.
Correct.
All right. So we're going to get, and we do see you watching live. So if you're watching, I believe on YouTube and LinkedIn, I don't know about X, but you should be able to comment in real time. So if you are brave, feel free to comment real time and we will put it on the screen. So let's go to some of these questions. I have to find them. Okay. All right. So the first one is,
and I haven't really previewed these, so this will be fun.
No, no. Okay, so the first one, we're going to show it on the screen, but say it as well for people listening, from Marcel, 1979. How do you guys separate politics from day-to-day life?
We don't. Oh.
I do, you don't.
We do.
I do, you don't.
Okay. Would you like to expand on that?
I don't live, eat, and breathe politics the way you do.
Well, that's true.
Yes.
It is somewhat of a passion of mine.
It is.
I will agree with that. And the hardest thing for me is to hold back of telling you certain things because you're not necessarily a morning person like myself. I wake up and raring to go.
Oh my God. Andrea
needs a little time in the morning.
Yes. So thank God Monday through Friday, you don't work.
Yeah. But you're probably correct on that. But yeah, I mean, you have to understand boundaries and where you are and when one person wants input or not, because shockingly, you would not believe this, but I hold my tongue a lot. So
that's because I've worked with you to hold your tongue.
You don't realize I'm holding my tongue, but I am.
Okay. You just told the audience you do. All right. So that segues perfectly into our next question. Sheila M. in London. Hello, London.
Hello.
Do you talk about politics in bed? Great question. And this was one of the boundaries I had to put in place with this guy over here, because he does get so excited and he'll want to share something. And he closes his eyes and falls asleep in less than a minute. No joke. It's disgusting. And I am a very light sleeper, have issues sleeping, always have, and toss and turn, have nightmares, bad dreams. And I had to tell him he cannot talk about politics in bed. So how good of a job do you think you do on that?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at about a 6, I would say now, 7.
I think you're about a 7.
Okay.
But he cheats. He cheats. So I will not be in bed yet. I have gotten ready for bed. I've brushed my teeth, but I have not physically gotten into bed yet. And he'll say, wait, you're not in bed. Wait, I can share a story. Which makes me really mad because I am getting ready for bed. Yes.
Yeah, because I love to read. You know, I got my laptop and stuff before, you know, in bed. And you do
all the things that people say not to do
that
lead to bad sleep. Mm-hmm. And you're a solid sleeper.
Amen.
Yes. Okay. So we don't talk about politics in bed. And if he starts to talk about something, I shut him down, or he'll say, but it's not politics. And I just get mad.
Occasionally.
Yes.
Occasionally,
you need to respect that boundary more.
I am working on it.
Yes.
Yes, as you can see.
Okay. All right. Next one. Shane Q in NI?
Northern Ireland, I'm guessing.
Northern Ireland? No. Okay. How can you be with someone who disagrees with you on vitally important issues? Ooh, good question.
That's a very good question. I mean, probably the biggest difference we have is abortion.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So how can you be with someone who disagrees with you on vitally important issues? You know, life in general is precious in terms of not talking about abortion, but living and being with somebody, you know, is bigger than issues.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
And I have said, as a conservative, I know abortion's really big on my side of the aisle. It's not my drop dead issue, no pun intended at all, but it is not that. I think there are ways that we can change the culture in terms of just having women accept that abortion is wrong, if you will. But not doing it through legislation.
Right. So. And I totally disagree with that.
Okay.
So, yeah. I think for me, that's the single biggest issue we disagree on. I've talked about this on previous episodes, so please go back and listen to other seasons. But that was something I had to come to terms with before on our very first date, because it kind of threw me for a loop. And I had to decide whether, you know, it was a deal breaker for me, and it's just not. It might have been very different if we had met when we were much younger.
Yeah.
And also if I was still childbearing age and wanted to have children, like that, it could have been a much bigger deal, but it's not. So.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Shane Q and NI. I still want to know what NI is. I don't get it. Okay. All right. I love this one. Jess Bob and NH.
New Hampshire.
I'm going to say New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, there, Bob.
Has either person influenced the other's politics?
Would you like to take that one?
I'm going to say that I have not influenced your politics at all.
You have, but probably not in the way that you haven't changed my politics. Yeah. You've actually made me think more. I remember early on when we met years ago and you talked about gender and how it was different than sex. And you got me really thinking about it. And it reinforced my belief that gender and sex are the same thing. And we've just hijacked the word gender. But things that you bring up get me thinking.
Okay.
So it's changing in different ways, but not changing my mind necessarily.
Right. And I'm not trying to change your mind. I think that's mm-hmm. the most important thing here. I think that's that we should say is we're not trying to change the other person's mind.
Well, I think if you put forth a good argument, a good position, and is respected by the other person, they might eventually.
But change. Our goal is not trying to change each other's minds.
It's not.
Okay.
Damn.
Oh my God.
All right.
And I will say what bothers me is that people think Edward has had more influence on my politics. My ex-husband's a conservative, okay? A very different kind of conservative. He's an atheist. He's not Christian like you. And he's a conservative, I would say, under the guise of, if you don't know what this is, people, you're going to have to Google it. He considers himself an objectivist, which is the philosophy that Ayn Rand essentially invented. And it was very interesting because with my ex-husband, I could never have done a show like this because he just would beat his views down your throat. Like he just would never, ever, ever let up. And it all went back to this philosophy of objectivism. And he wanted to convert me, literally wanted me to embrace it. And told me he was disappointed when I didn't. And it's like, you knew that when you met me. But anyway, I digress. So I think that you can have influence and that's fine, but you shouldn't try to change the other person. You fell in love with them for a reason.
Yes.
I didn't fall in love with you because you're conservative.
Really?
No.
I fell in love
with you because of who you are.
Thank you.
You have such a beautiful heart.
The same with you. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah. If you're falling in love with somebody because of their politics, yeah, that's not going to work.
Well, I'm not going to say who this was, but I can think of a couple that agreed 100% ideologically, politically on every single issue. Guess what? That did not make their marriage last at all. Okay, because they had all these other problems. But they both, I think, thought because we are 100% aligned on these things, that everything else would work itself out. And there are way more important things.
Amen.
Okay. All right. Oh, I love this question. Okay, next. Silly Sally 6. I like the alliteration.
Say that three times.
Politics is depressing. Girl, I'm with you. How do you make it fun?
Is it fun?
Well, you think it's fun.
I'm just always very curious and I'm always fascinated on other views, people's worldviews.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. That, you know, you hear somebody talking that you think is complete nonsense. How do they come about that worldview?
Okay.
I mean, to me, that's fascinating. So I'm more inquisitive than getting depressed by.
Yes, you. Yeah, the glass is not half full for you. It's overflowing. Like
true.
He is so ridiculously happy and optimistic.
I'm a bit optimistic. Yes.
His happiness set point is super high, people. If you know what that is, like it's really high. I'm gonna take this. How we made it fun.
All right.
I'm gonna out us a little.
Oh boy.
Okay, so in 2016, Edward and I had been together for a year. He had just moved here. He had his own apartment. And we were watching the election, so Clinton versus Trump, at his place because I didn't even own a TV at the time. Like that's right. That's how much I care, right? And we decided to make it fun.
Okay.
Do you remember this?
Vaguely.
Yes. Okay. So we decided to make it fun and entertaining because I did not vote in that election. I was really disappointed with Hillary, but I didn't want either candidate to win. But anyway. So we decided to make it fun. So since I had been a registered Democrat and he was a registered Republican, every time the Republicans got an electoral vote,
Oh, God, you're not.
I am. I got spanked. And every time the Democrats got an electoral vote, he got spanked. So it was fun.
Oh, good Lord.
He's embarrassed. I can't believe he's embarrassed. Oh, my gosh. If you're listening to the podcast, I never embarrass him. And he's
I think that was, you like slapped me on the arm, right? I think that's what it was.
Do you want me to tell people what we actually
Let's move along here.
Okay, so you can make politics fun. And we made it a lot of fun that night.
Yeah, there was, I believe, alcohol involved.
So. Yes, but instead of doing shots, I mean, shots would have been terrible. That would have been too much. Lord, yeah, I know.
Would have been alcohol poisoning.
Yes, yeah, so we just had fun. All right, moving on.
I should have reviewed these questions.
I know. You didn't review the questions.
Okay.
All right. Patty Cakes 90. Are there any issues where you 100% agree? I have an idea.
The answer is yes. But
yes. But I think on the count of three, we should say the issue that we think we 100% agree on, like the top issue. You ready?
Yep.
One, two, three. The trans. Border.
Oh, see, I was going with trans rights, or trans and kids.
Oh, trans and kids. No, the border. I would say the border is the top issue we agree on 100%. Like, yeah, like every aspect of the border. Immigration should be legal, shutting down the border, building the wall, like every aspect of that.
All right.
Stopping fentanyl from more drugs coming across the border.
Sex trafficking, human trafficking, yeah, exactly. That sort of stuff. Yeah.
I think that is the issue where no matter which piece you pick out of it, we agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So
that's true.
It is possible, people. All right. We got another one. From Porchweenie.
Porchweenie. Okay. I don't even want to know what that means.
Do you listen to other news or political podcasts? And if so, which ones? We do. You go first. Well, who is your hero that you no longer can listen to?
Well, that was obviously Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
The Godfather. No question. But who I listen to, I usually listen to Glenn Beck. In the morning,
yeah,
followed by Megan and then Andrew Wilkow on Sirius XM.
But yeah, you're listening on Sirius.
Yes.
Yeah.
All on Sirius.
So I listened to Megan and have for a long time. I initially wasn't crazy about her podcast, but I felt like she really found her footing in the last year or two. Like it just got better and better and sharper and cleaner and better guests. So I listen to Megan. I try to listen to Glenn sometimes. I just can't. I love Dave Rubin mm-hmm. Report.
Yep.
And occasionally I listen to Ruthless.
Okay.
And I've turned you on to them. So
yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that's it, I think.
Yeah.
I have lots of other podcasts I listen to that have nothing to do with politics. Yeah.
You're quite the podcast listener.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So.
Oh, we did. Yes. I actually picked one out here. This was mine here.
Yes, I know. Right? This one's yours. Yes. Okay. So this is from Harris Rules Forever.
I just love the name.
Okay. Yes. Wow. She's okay. She is pretty hardcore. You're a fool. I'm going to say that to you. Biden and Harris have created over 16 million jobs. Trump lost more jobs than anyone in history. How can you support Trump? Okay. Well, first of all, I never said I was. But anyway, this is definitely directed to you.
Yeah, I was glad this came because I've been waiting for this because you keep hearing Kamala saying, we created 16 million jobs and Donald Trump is the worst, you know, right? Okay, I'm going to throw some numbers at here real quickly.
Take your time.
My research. All right. So March and April of 2020, right? Full-blown COVID. We lost almost 22 million jobs in this country, right? 21.9 million jobs because of the lockdowns.
Right.
And that's mostly the governor's fault. No question about that.
Yes.
But by January of 2021, so when Biden took office, we'd regained over 12.5 million of those jobs.
Okay.
All right. So more than half of those jobs had come back.
Okay.
When they took over. And the unemployment rate was 6.4%. when Biden and Harris took over.
Okay.
That was down from 14.8% back in that March and April of 2020. Yeah. So it had dropped 8.4% in 9 months.
So during his last year, Trump made that out.
Right. And that is the largest decrease in the history of the Bureau of Labor Statistics database, right?
Okay.
So it is the biggest drop ever.
Wait, what is the largest decrease?
From 14.8% unemployment down to 6.4.
So okay.
8.4% is the difference.
So
that's the largest drop in 9 months ever in history.
So historic recovery.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So it's coming back, right? Things are cranking. Yep. So Biden and Harris take over. It took them 17 more months to get back those extra jobs that were lost of those almost 22 million. Yeah. And, you know, they like to, so basically they only created 6.4 million jobs, new jobs. Okay. Okay. But looking at 6.4 million jobs, you're thinking, well, that's pretty good. That's not bad. Well, that was actually over quite a number of months. And if you divide it out, a good jobs report is about 250,000 a week.
Right.
That 6.4 million that they created just to get back to what they've created, giving them credit for, is only 150,000 a week. So a good report is 250 or more. They underperformed all the way up to now.
Well, okay. So I think it's a little confusing, those numbers that you just doled out. But what you said at the end really put the cap on it. It's the actual jobs report that comes out every month. Right. And so far in the last few months, they've had to, and they always revise the report, right?
Yeah.
And they've had to revise it down. So they project this many new jobs and then it gets revised down. And that is under a Biden-Harris administration.
Yes. And for the previous year that they revised it, down 818,000 jobs. So almost a million jobs you can take off of that 6.4.
Yeah.
So much for your 16 million jobs that you created. You didn't. It was people going back to work, and it took you way longer to create jobs than it should have. No question.
Last thing here before we get into our fun segments that we like to finish with as were you ever worried about our differences politically?
No. And as I always say, it doesn't bother me that she's wrong.
Oh God. Yes. Come on. Be serious.
No, seriously. No, it doesn't. And the reason for me is, you know, I've had a number of years and I love politics and I love having a belief system and being able to back it up and I've done the research. I know what the numbers are. I know how I feel about certain things, how I think about certain things. And I'm very comfortable in my beliefs. And so it doesn't, if somebody I think is wrong or wrongheaded about something, it really doesn't bother me because, you know, I always look at it as I have an opportunity to at least put out some information that they may not have known. So it never really bothered me at all.
Yeah. I think it only concerned me because of my ex-husband being a conservative zealot, but not in the same way you are in terms of being a conservative. I've already outlined that. But I mean, he was just such a zealot about it and trying to convert me to his side of things. And the thing is, we actually agreed on more issues than you and I do, because my ex-husband was pretty socially liberal, which I know you mean not a true conservative, but he couldn't understand why I didn't agree with him. And I think if you're in a relationship like that, this is not a relationship advice show, but we're going to throw it out there.
All right.
If you're in a relationship and someone is trying to convince you that it's their way or the highway, whether it's politics or this or that, take a step back and look.
Take the highway.
Yeah, right. Take a step back, because that means that person's trying to change who you are. And what I love about Edward is that I am 100% myself with him.
Yeah. And vice versa.
And it's so nice. It's wonderful, because you don't really get that very often.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously you mentioned earlier, it helps that we met later in life.
It does.
Because
you're
a more secure, or you should be anyway. I know a lot of people that are age that are still, you know,
true.
Pretending, right? But
yes.
Yeah, don't settle. Don't pretend. Be yourself.
Yeah.
If the other person doesn't like you, you know what? You shouldn't be with that person.
Yes. Right?
If they don't like who you really are.
I'm going to quote Dr. Seuss.
Uh-oh.
If the person matters, they don't mind. And if they mind, they don't matter.
Okay.
So there you go. Loosely quoted.
Go cat in the hat.
There we go. All right. So we don't have it this week in wins. It was kind of a slow week, and we're certainly not going to give Kamala the win for the interview. but we do have it this week in what the fuck. Mm-hmm. So WTF, this is from our good friend, Olivia Rondeau at Breitbart.com. And Edward gave me this one since I'm a former Californian. This is so hard for me to read, but I'm going to do it. Convicted kidnapper, pedophile, could be released from a life sentence under California law. That is the headline. That is not a joke. a convicted pedophile who kidnapped and sexually assaulted his friend's 5-year-old daughter could be released from prison due to a recent California law change, despite being sentenced to 350 years in jail. Charles William Mix was 47 when he committed the horrible 2003 crime, smuggling the young girl hundreds of miles away from her family's home in Riverside, California, just kind of east of Los Angeles, to Utah in a stolen vehicle before committing gruesome acts. And this is what he said, you guys. "She'd fight me, but I'd persist," he told Riverside police, referring to when he would undress the victim. "She wasn't used to it."
She's five.
She's five. Yeah. Mix was convicted of a host of felonies, including willful child cruelty, kidnapping to commit robbery or rape, lewd acts with a child under 14, and burglary. Though the victim's family has rested, knowing that her abuser would spend the rest of his life behind bars, he could now be paroled as part of California's elderly parole program, which was modified in 2021 to lower the age of eligibility to 50 years. So let's take a timeout right there, that 50 is now elderly.
Yeah.
Okay. Really? I'm over 50, not much, but a little, and I'm not elderly. So let's just stop right there. Like time out. Okay. But this is unreal. This guy was sentenced to 350 years in jail, supposed to die in jail, and he might get out. Mm-hmm. So convicts under this law must also have served 20 years or more of continuous incarceration to qualify. This guy, this horrible pedophile Mix, he now meets both requirements. Mm-hmm. He has served 20 years, and because they lowered the age to 50, he could qualify for release. This is a what the fuck. This is, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I have one thing to say about it. There's a reason I am for the death penalty. It's because the recidivism rate is zero.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get executed, you're probably not going to commit the crime again.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. This is something where I was never aligned with people left of center, which is where I feel like I fall, just left of center. I've always believed in the death penalty.
Okay.
I always have.
There you go.
Yeah. And I got used to get a lot of flack for that. So, okay. Now, we always like to end the show a brighter note.
Well,
we see you watching live. Well, it's a fun one. This is our favorite segment.
This Week in Woke.
All right. Tell us.
From Josie Hathaway of Augustana College, which I believe is in Indiana.
Okay.
In the collegefix.com.
Actually. Okay. We love the College Fix.
Headline, climate change classes should be mandatory in med school, doctor says.
Okay, continue.
From the article, climate change courses should be mandatory for aspiring doctors, according to medical students and clinicians in Michigan. Quote, "My personal opinion is that it should be mandatory," said Dr. Lisa Del Bueno. She told the College Fix via email, "Climate change has been politicized, but it's not a political issue. It would be irresponsible to not prepare future practitioners for the realities they will be facing." So she is the founder and president of Michigan Clinicians for Climate Actions. I actually looked her up, and she's been in a number of climate action groups, if you will, throughout her career.
Okay.
However, a trained economist who formerly taught at the University of Michigan Flint criticized the push to change the medical school course load. Mark Perry, a senior fellow from Do No Harm, told The Fix, "Any curriculum relating to climate change in medical schools should definitely be optional and not required, because it will likely be ideologically biased and not balanced. And also, especially if coverage of what becomes climate hysteria replaces science-based curriculum in medical schools." And the rest of the quote is, "If there is any climate change curriculum introduced in U.S. medical schools, it should be carefully balanced with a presentation of both the negative and positive effects of a changing climate." Amen. A little bit more in the article was, a warming climate is actually good for growing food and sustaining life and cutting down on the number of deaths by cold. So there's no way this would be taught in a balanced way. Zero chance of it.
Well, and yes, when you're going through medical school, it's already so difficult.
You got enough stuff.
You got plenty to worry about. And I think this is sort of I agree with this senior fellow from Do No Harm that it can, okay, make it optional, but do not make it required. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. If you want to take it, great, fine. If you don't, yeah. These doctors and these aspiring doctors are inundated with material.
Well, you know, I work a lot with doctors and I would love to know what they think about this. I can't imagine any of them going, yay, another class I have to take.
A whole other course series. Yes. Because it's not just going to be one class.
That's true. All right. So that was This Week in Woke. Anything else for our people watching live? Yay, it's streaming work today.
Well, hopefully this next week. You know, this last week was a little bit boring. We've got kind of a tweener week where everybody's just out campaigning. I'm sure Donald Trump will be, you know, railed about something he said. But the following week is going to be the first debate.
That's going to be good.
So we'll be building up to that. I think we've got a good show. I've already got some things in mind for next week. So,
oh, really?
Very excited. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I inspired you. I did.
You did indeed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for the questions. Please follow us on all social media platforms and join us live most Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern. I had to do my head. Sorry. We stream live on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and possibly Facebook. We never kind of know with Facebook. And if you are listening to the podcast, which always drops the next day, so tomorrow, Monday, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast available wherever you're listening right now. Guys, I can't tell you enough. Those ratings and reviews mean so much. That's how more people find our podcast. So please rate and review. And if there's a particular episode you loved, please share it with a friend. And you can also support our show by joining our locals community. It's new. You can join for free, and that is in the show notes. And you can reach out to us if you want to ask us questions like we did today, Q&A. Go to myfavoriteconservative.show. There's a contact button, myfavoriteconservative.show. There's even a little microphone where you can leave us a voice message too.
All right. We welcome that. Yes.
All right. Thanks so much for everyone who watched live. Have a great Labor Day. Yeah.
Yes.
Weekend.
Let's do it.